All right, so we're gonna dive into something that affects, well, I mean, a lot of us really, Ontario's minimum wage.
Yeah, big topic.
We got like a full breakdown straight from the Ontario government's website.
Oh, wow.
It's surprisingly detailed.
Okay.
Have you ever like stopped and thought about like how a minimum wage is calculated or if you're getting paid like what you should be?
Yeah, for sure.
So this deep dive is all about breaking down that like complexity and understanding, what it all means.
Okay, that's good.
So first off, let's just define what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Minimum wage, basically the legal floor for how much an employer can pay you per hour.
Yeah, and it applies to most workers in Ontario.
Right.
So full-time, part-time, even commission.
Yeah.
There are a few exceptions,
Yeah.
but for like the vast majority,
Right.
minimum wage is the baseline.
Yeah, and it's important to remember that each paycheck needs to meet the requirements.
For sure.
Okay, so now for the number everyone wants to know. As of October 1st, 2024, the general minimum wage in Ontario is $17.20 an hour.
1720.
Do you remember back in October 2023
Yeah.
when it jumped from $15.50 to
Oh,
$16.55?
yeah, that was a big jump.
Yeah.
That's because minimum wage is tied to inflation
Right.
and adjusted annually.
Yeah.
It's designed to keep pace with the rising cost of living, so your buying power stays relatively stable.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But here's where things get a little more complicated.
Okay.
There isn't just one minimum wage.
Right.
There are different categories based on the type of work you do.
Okay.
For example, students under 18 working limited hours have a slightly lower minimum wage.
Okay.
It's $16.20.
So that recognizes that students are often working part-time while going to school,
Right.
might have different financial needs,
Yeah.
expectations than full-time workers.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then there are the hunting, fishing, and wilderness guides.
Okay.
Their situation's quite unique because
Interesting.
they aren't paid hourly. They're paid in blocks of time.
Okay.
So if they work less than 5 consecutive hours in a day, they get a different rate
Okay.
than if they work five or more.
Interesting.
So imagine like guiding a group on a backcountry skiing trip
Yeah.
or a multi-day kayaking expedition.
Wow.
The pay structure needs to like reflect the nature of that work.
For sure. Yeah.
Speaking of different work environments, have you ever considered how working from home factors in?
I don't think so.
So, with more and more people working remotely,
Yeah.
regulations have adapted to include a specific minimum wage for home workers,
For one worker.
like those who are, say, sewing clothes, working at a call center,
Okay.
coding software from home.
Right.
It's set at $18.90 an hour.
1890. All
That's
right.
higher than the general minimum wage.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense,
It does.
considering the potential expenses and setup
Right.
involved in working from home.
For sure. It's about recognizing that different working conditions may require adjustments
Right.
to ensure fairness.
Okay.
Now let's talk about commission workers.
Okay.
This is where things can get tricky.
Okay.
Even if your pay is primarily based on commission,
Right.
you still need to earn at least the minimum wage for every hour worked.
Okay, so let's say like you work 25 hours in a week and you make $300 in commission.
Okay.
If the minimum wage is $17.20, you'd be owed an extra $130
Wow.
to make up the difference.
Yeah, the document actually gives an example of a worker named Luba
Okay.
who was in that exact situation.
Really?
It highlights how important it is for commission-based workers to understand their rights and make sure they're being paid fairly.
Yeah, for sure. It's not always as straightforward as it seems.
Not at all.
And then there's the whole issue of room and board.
Right.
Have you ever had a job where you were provided with accommodations and meals?
Yeah, it's common in certain industries,
Right.
especially like those with seasonal or remote work.
Right. And those perks can actually be factored into your minimum wage calculations.
Oh, wow.
Of course, there are specific rules about how this works.
Right.
The key condition is that you must actually use the room
I know.
and eat the meals provided.
Makes sense.
And there are set values assigned to different types of accommodations
Okay.
and meals to ensure consistency.
Right.
For example, a private room is valued at $31.70 per week,
Okay.
while a shared room is $15.85.
Gotcha.
And individual meals are valued at $2.55,
Okay.
with a weekly maximum of $53.55 for all meals.
Wow.
It gets pretty detailed
Yeah.
with specific values, even for combinations of like room and meals.
Interesting.
It's all about ensuring transparency
Right.
and making sure that both employers and employees understand how these calculations work.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay, so we've covered like a lot of ground already, but there's still more to uncover.
Okay.
Have you ever been called in for like a short shift only to be sent home early?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's so frustrating.
Yeah, especially
Yeah.
if you've like gone out of your way to get to work.
Right, exactly.
Well, that's where the 3-hour rule comes in.
The 3-hour rule.
Yeah, it's designed to protect workers from being called in for like a really brief period and then just sent home, without fair compensation.
Okay, so it's essentially a guarantee of like a minimum amount of pay for those short shifts.
Right, so how does it work exactly?
So if your regular workday is more than 3 hours, but you're called in for a shift that ends up being less than 3 hours,
Right.
you're entitled to a minimum payment.
All right.
And it's calculated based on whichever is higher. 3 hours at your regular rate of pay, or the amount you earned for the time you actually worked, plus your regular rate for the remaining time, up to 3 hours.
Okay, can you give me an example?
Yeah, sure. Imagine you're a server who usually works like 4 or 5 hour shifts.
Okay.
You get called in to cover a 2 hour lunch rush, but then things slow down and you're sent home early.
Yeah.
Even though you only work 2 hours, you'd still be entitled to be paid for at least three.
Right, that makes sense. It protects workers from like being shortchanged just for showing up.
Exactly.
But I imagine there are some exceptions to this rule.
Of course, there are always
Yeah.
exceptions. For instance, if your regular shift is already 3 hours or less, this rule wouldn't apply.
Okay.
And it also wouldn't apply if the reason for the short shift was beyond the employer's control.
Right.
So think about situations like a sudden power outage
Yeah.
or a snowstorm that forces the business to close early.
So it's not meant to like penalize employers for situations they can't control.
Exactly.
Okay, what about students? Does this rule apply to them as well?
That's a great question. It used to be mainly for non-students,
Okay.
but as of January 1st, 2019, the 3-hour rule was expanded to include students in most cases.
Oh, wow.
It's about recognizing that students deserve the same protections as other workers.
Yeah, I bet a lot of students don't even know about this rule.
Definitely worth spreading the word.
Yeah.
However, there's still a few exceptions for students in specific roles. If you're working at a children's camp, for example,
Yeah.
or in a recreational program run by a charity, the rule might not apply.
Okay.
And the Wilderness Guide exception pops up here again as well.
Right.
Even if a student is working at a camp or in a recreational program, if they're also acting as a wilderness guide, the 3-hour rule doesn't apply.
Wow. There are a lot of moving parts to this minimum wage system.
There really are.
It's way more complex than I ever realized.
It really is. From the different categories and special rules to the impact of room and board and this 3-hour rule, there's a lot to consider.
Right.
But remember, this information is meant to empower you. The more you know about your rights as an employee, the better equipped you'll be to advocate for yourself and make sure you're being treated fairly.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to your livelihood.
For sure.
Now, we've talked about how the minimum wage is calculated and all the different factors that can influence it. But
Right.
let's like zoom out for a moment and talk about how these rates change over time.
Yep.
We mentioned earlier that minimum wage is tied to inflation.
Yeah.
But how does that actually work in practice?
It's a pretty straightforward process. The government reviews the Ontario Consumer Price Index,
Okay.
which measures inflation, and based on that review, they determine whether a minimum wage increase is warranted.
So it's not an automatic increase every year.
Not necessarily the increase or lack thereof is directly related to the rate of inflation.
Okay.
Some years might see a larger increase than others, and in some years there might not be an increase at all.
That makes sense. So if they decide to increase the minimum wage, when does that new rate take effect?
The government announces the new rate by April 1st, and it comes into effect on October 1st of that same year.
Okay.
This gives employers and employees about 6 months to adjust to the new rate.
Okay, what happens if like someone's pay period falls right in the middle of that October 1st changeover?
Right.
Do they get paid the old rate for part of the pay period and the new rate for the other part?
That's a great question, and the answer is yes. In that situation, the pay period is essentially split into two.
Okay.
Employees are paid the old minimum wage for the portion of the pay period that falls before October 1st, and the new minimum wage for the portion that falls after.
So they might have like two different minimum wages on the same paycheck?
Exactly. It ensures that everyone is paid fairly, even when the rate changes mid-pay period.
It's impressive how much like thought and detail goes into these regulations.
Yeah.
I'm feeling much more informed about my rights as a worker in Ontario.
That's great to hear.
But I'm curious, we've talked a lot about the how of minimum wage. What about the why?
Okay.
Why do we even have a minimum wage in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question, and one I think like a lot of people don't really stop to think about.
Yeah.
We get so caught up in like you know, the details of how it works that we forget to ask why it exists in the first place.
It's easy to take for granted, for sure, but having a minimum wage is fundamental to a fair and just society, you know?
So let's break that down. Why is minimum wage so important?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at its core, it's about ensuring a basic standard of living for, like, anyone who works, right? It's about recognizing that every worker deserves to be compensated fairly for their time and effort, regardless of the type of job they do.
So it's more than just, like, about making sure people have enough to get by. It's about, like, valuing their work.
Exactly. It's a statement that we as a society believe that no one should be exploited for their labor.
Mm-hmm.
The minimum wage sets a floor, a baseline below which wages just cannot fall.
And that floor, like, helps to create a more level playing field for everyone, right? Giving workers more bargaining power and preventing employers from taking advantage of those who might be in a more vulnerable position.
Absolutely. It's about protecting the most vulnerable workers and ensuring that they are not being taken advantage of. But the benefits of a minimum wage go beyond individual workers. It can actually have a positive impact on the entire economy.
Oh, how so?
When people earn more money, they tend to spend more money, which means businesses see increased demand for their products and services. And this can lead to economic growth and job creation.
So, like, a fair minimum wage creates a ripple effect that benefits everyone.
Exactly. It stimulates the economy, puts more money in people's pockets, and creates a more just and equitable society.
But I imagine, like, setting the right minimum wage can be a balancing act, right? You want it to be high enough to protect workers and boost the economy, but not so high that it puts undue pressure on businesses.
You hit the nail on the head. It's about finding that sweet spot, that balance between protecting workers' rights and fostering a healthy business environment.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of factors to consider, like the cost of living, inflation, average wages, the overall health of the economy, and the needs of both workers and businesses.
It sounds like a complex equation with a lot of moving parts.
It definitely is. And that's why it's so important to have these discussions and engage with the issue from all sides. We need to hear from workers, businesses, economists, and policymakers to make sure we're making informed decisions that benefit everyone.
Well, this deep dive has certainly given me a lot to think about. I'm going to look at minimum wage in a whole new light now.
That's the goal we've explored. The details of how it's calculated, the different categories, the special rules, and the rationale behind it. But ultimately, the most important takeaway is understanding your rights as a worker.
Knowing your rights allows you to advocate for yourself and make sure you're being treated fairly. And it also allows you to engage in these important conversations about how we create a more just and equitable society for everyone.
Exactly. Knowledge is power. And hopefully this deep dive has empowered you to be a more informed and engaged citizen.
So to our listeners, the next time you hear someone talking about minimum wage, you'll understand not just the numbers, but the why behind those numbers. You'll be able to participate in those conversations and advocate for fair wages for yourself and others.
And remember, even though we've covered a lot of ground here today, this is just the beginning. There's always more to learn and explore.
That's the beauty of knowledge, isn't it? It sparks curiosity and opens up new avenues for exploration. So keep asking questions, stay curious, and never stop learning. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of Ontario's minimum wage. Until next time, keep diving deep.